You know, if you just turned the radio on and you're wondering where the heck is Chapter a Day, I tell you what, you may have not have heard, but it's hard to imagine. You may not have heard that we've reorganized our statewide networks. And Chapter a Day will be airing in the evening, and you can listen right here at 9:30 tonight. Or here's another idea. You can listen anytime online. A new chapter is available after 12 noon every weekday. Just go to WPR.org, click on shows in the left-hand corner, and find Chapter a Day. So just go to that left-hand corner, find Chapter a Day. And for full schedule of signals, visit WPR.org/new. And we're going to turn our attention to maybe spicy food or maybe too much caffeine. I know it sends many people to the bathroom, but what you eat or drink could cause something more serious, like an overactive bladder. And we're going to be continuing our conversation about bladder control with our guest today, Dr. Michael Grelnick. Dr. Grelnick is a professor of urology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, director of the Urodynamics Laboratory at Frederick Hospital in Milwaukee. Dr. Grelnick specializes in incontinence, lower urinary tract reconstruction, and neurogenic bladder dysfunction. So, questions about your bladder? Do you want to know what foods to avoid and maybe what to eat more of? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Dr. Michael Grelnick, thank you for joining in today. Pleased to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. My wife insists that I let you know that she is a huge fan, and I believe she'll be listening as well.
I hope she's found the right station to tune into. Oh, man. Well, let's talk about overactive bladders. It needs a bladder that needs to urinate urgently, I guess is what you'd call an overactive bladder.
Correct.
What causes a bladder to be overactive?
So there's a variety of defined pathologies that can cause this issue. Any neurologic condition that either affects the brain or the spinal cord can impact the way the bladder is regulated. So a stroke, multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, things like that are all notorious for causing bladders to become overactive. In some cases, it's other forms of nerve trauma from perhaps a car accident or previous surgery. But in many cases, it's actually called idiopathic, meaning we don't even know what the actual cause is. We've ruled out certain obvious causes. One other classic one is a urinary infection. And so when we can't find a definite cause for it, we call that idiopathic or unknown overactive bladder. And unfortunately, that tends to be the more common scenario, that we can't define a specific pathology, but you've got the symptoms and we're going to call it an overactive bladder and treat it as such.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that came into my head, and I don't know if this would be true or not, obesity maybe, would that be...
So whether that's a true cause per se, I'm not sure anybody truly knows that, but there's no question that obesity does not help overactive bladders or even the other form of urinary incontinence, which is called stress incontinence, which is when people leak urine when they cough or sneeze, such as happens after childbirth for some women. Obesity is a known factor in contributing to that, as well as to overactive bladders. But obesity in and of itself, does it actually cause the incontinence? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Having said that, treatment of the obesity, such with significant weight loss, can dramatically improve the way the bladder behaves.
Brad in Delavan has a question for you. Let's go there. Brad, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually taking three medicines now. I'm taking the generic version of Flomax. I'm taking Mirabex, and I'm taking Desmopressin. I've had progressively increased prostate symptoms over the years, although I keep passing my prostate exams with flying colors. In the past year or two, I've been urinating as much as 10 times a night. The Desmopressin is helping, I guess, to minimize urine production during the night. But just wondering if your expert might have any insight on what I can do next.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the first thing I always wonder about when I hear about urinary frequency, do you have troubles during the day or is it only at night that you're going frequently?
I feel like my Tamps lotion is keeping me under control during the day. I do notice that I'm actually taking 0.4 milligrams twice a day, and so that means about every 12 hours. And I notice that once I get to about the 11th hour, I start to feel an urgency to urinate that I haven't felt for the past 11 hours.
Well, that's either, you know, the Tamsulosin is targeting the muscle that surrounds your prostate and the mouth of the bladder where the bladder and the prostate meet. The Tamsulosin isn't actually a treatment for an overactive bladder per se. That's actually trying to treat the theory that your prostate might be restricting the flow of urine out of the bladder, which then makes the bladder become overactive. So that's what the Flomax or the Tamsulosin is for. The Mirabegron or Mirbetric that you're taking, that's an actual overactive bladder drug, which tries to, for lack of a better word, relax the hyperactive bladder. And then the Desmopressin is what I assume you take that at bedtime, and that's purely to try to reduce how much urine the body produces, because what the Desmopressin does is it tells the kidneys to reabsorb the water that they were going to put out in your urine and put it back into your blood, so now you have less urine. But if the nighttime issues predominate and you really aren't having all that much daytime issues, you know, one of the big questions is, you know, are you truly making too much urine at night, for which the Desmopressin is indicated? But then the question becomes why? And one of the most notorious causes for excess nighttime urine production is sleep apnea. And I don't know if you're a big time snorer, and you probably wouldn't even be aware of it, but whoever sleeps with you might. And if it turns out you are, that it could actually be a symptom of the sleep apnea, and you might want to get yourself tested, because treating the sleep apnea, if you have it, especially if it happens to be severe, could go a long ways to reducing how much urine you produce at night. On top of that, you end up actually sleeping better if you treat the sleep apnea. If you have untreated sleep apnea, your sleep is actually disrupted, so you don't sleep well, and then you're always tired the next day. And it's amazing how this plays out. I had one patient referred to me, this little old lady who was referred to me for bedwetting. And she was referred by her internist. The first thing I ask is, you know, do you snore? Has anybody told you you're a big time snorer? And it turns out, oh yeah, she does. And she's always tired during the day and so forth. And so we sent her for a sleep study, and lo and behold, she had sleep apnea. And once she gets the treatment, which is called CPAP, where you wear a special breathing mask at night, any night that she wears her CPAP, she no longer wets the bed. If she doesn't wear her CPAP, she wets the bed. And so that's a relatively easy thing to diagnose via a sleep study. And on top of that, there's reasons to treat the sleep apnea independent of any nuisance urinary issues. Sleep apnea puts a stress on your cardiovascular system. So it's bad for the heart. And so therefore, you know, it might be something to pursue with your doctor.
Brad, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Christina in Glenwood will give you a chance. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I was going to buy a small in-home trampoline for exercise, but I read that it could actually cause bladder issues, and I'm wondering if that's true.
So it's... Probably not. I mean, there's no question. There are studies that have shown that elite female athletes who do high intensity workouts are actually more prone to urinary incontinence than those who don't. Having said that, my suspicion is that we're not talking about excessively strenuous activity when it comes to a trampoline. Now, if you're prone to leaking, let's say when you cough or sneeze or lift something heavy, you might experience that while using the trampoline, but that doesn't mean the trampoline is what's causing your problem. It's just one of the variables, just like a cough, that can lead to that type of leaking. And that leaking is due to weakness of your sphincter, your urinary sphincter muscle, which is part of the pelvic floor that you guys have all been talking about leading up to this.
Christina, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Michael Goralnik, our guest today, as we talk with him about bladder dysfunction, and maybe we haven't gotten into foods yet, but we will. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. And I did want to make a little correction on Chapter a Day. The audio is available for Chapter a Day now every day at 12:01 a.m., not noon. So you can listen with your morning coffee or walking the dog any time after midnight on Wisconsin Public Radio Ideas. Network. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Taking a look at incontinence and maybe how diet can help reduce incontinence with our guest today, Dr. Michael Goralnik, a professor of urology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, also director of Urodynamics Lab at Froedtert Hospital in Milwaukee. And we'll take some calls. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Email to WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Jack in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hey, thank you very much, Dr. Goralnik. So, 78-year-old male. I had a holip a few years ago, and I now have an artificial urinary sphincter that works okay, I guess, but it occasionally leaks. Question is there any surgical recovery that'll get me past that artificial sphincter?
So, first of all, a holip is a holmium laser enucleation of the prostate. You know, some people refer to that type of surgery as the old-fashioned rotor-rooter, where you carve out the prostate to widen the channel to make it easier for the urine to pass in men who have benign prostate hyperplasia and urinary symptoms. And unfortunately, you experienced one of the relatively uncommon long-term complications of that, which is urinary incontinence, that is related to damage or weakness of your sphincter that probably occurred as a result of the surgery. Depending on how severe the incontinence was is what ultimately determines whether you ultimately end up going for surgery for the incontinence. Now, the artificial sphincter valve that you had implanted is actually considered the gold standard, kind of the be-all and end-all when it comes to treating that type of incontinence that you're experiencing. I'm assuming your incontinence was predominantly activity related. The more exercise or moving around or perhaps coughing, sneezing, is that correct?
All I have to do is breathe.
Okay. But are you also wetting yourself when you get a feeling of needing to urinate and perhaps can't get to the bathroom in time, or does that not occur?
Yes. Yes. Sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
And is that when you're saying you're leaking despite the artificial sphincter, or is it still with activity?
Activity actually doesn't seem to make things
Gotcha.
Any worse.
Right. Okay. So that actually tells you that the artificial sphincter is doing what it's supposed to do, and that is to lessen leaking with activity such as coughing, sneezing, exercising, lifting heavy things. the urgency leaking that you currently have, which is an overactive bladder, is not treated by an artificial sphincter. So you can still have the urgency to urinate, possibly even still leak a little bit of urine before you can get to the bathroom because you have to go so bad. And that doesn't mean that the artificial sphincter is not working properly. What it means is now you need treatments targeting the overactive bladder, which at this stage might involve some medication or even some other forms of procedures that can be done. There's nerve stimulation that can be done. We even inject Botox, the same Botox that people put into their wrinkles. We can inject that into the bladder to relax hyperactive bladder muscle, which is what causes that urgency and the urgency leaking.
Jack, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to get back to foods for a minute because we really are drinks. Drink did come up a little bit in our earlier show, our segments. I believe our physical therapist said that alcohol can actually be an irritant.
So there's a variety of liquids that are irritating to the bladder. Alcohol, definitely one of them. The other notorious ones are caffeine in the coffee. But another big one is carbonated beverages. And specifically, and this is counterintuitive for most people, diet soft drinks are worse than the non-diet soft drinks when it comes to the bladder. There's even a study that looked at that, and they actually, it's a funny study. They did it in nurses. I believe it was in the UK, and they had these nurses who weren't having symptoms of bladder problems, but they had them for kind of a week at a time consume pure water, carbonated water, then Diet Coke, regular Coke, caffeine-free Diet Coke. And obviously the best one was just plain water. The worst one was Diet Coke. Worse than regular Coke. Worse than caffeine-free Coke when it came to how often they would have to urinate and how urgently they had to urinate. So diet soda is one of the worst things you can drink if you've already got bladder problems. And that's sort of the thing for patients to figure out themselves is, you know, to take a day where you do consume that type of stuff versus a day where you don't and see how your bladder behaves. Now, maybe you'll be lucky and it won't make a difference, but for many people, they can tell the difference.
So what about food? Acidic food?
So certain foods can also be irritating to the bladder. It doesn't necessarily mean that they cause incontinence per se, but they might make the bladder a little more irritable. And for some people, it can actually become painful. And the classic types of foods in that regard are acidic foods. So citrus is notorious. Tomatoes, because of the acidity, can be problematic for some people. Spicy foods as well can sometimes be the problem. And again, it's a matter of figuring it out for yourself. If you notice an association, you might want to pursue it and really clarify it. And that, again, you do it by eliminating the possible offending agent and then see how your bladder behaves when you don't consume it. Then you could even try reintroducing it. And does the bladder deteriorate? If it does, well, then, hey, you found out that that particular food is no good for me. But, you know, as far as a list goes, citrus or acidy foods, spicy foods, those are the ones that are the most notorious.
And what about this idea that especially I think for older people, I've even heard a lot of people say, well, I've cut back on my drinking of anything. I don't drink water. I don't drink anything or as little as possible.
That's actually been shown to make a difference. So one study where they looked at patients who restricted their fluid intake, and they found that if you reduced your fluid consumption by perhaps 25%, there was a noticeable reduction in how often they went, how urgently they went, and how many times they went at night. Whereas conversely, if they increased their fluids, guess what? They ended up having to go more. It's really a matter of finding the right balance. I tell patients, drink so that you're not thirsty. But some people have it in their heads that they have to drink a certain minimum amount. You know, the old adage is 8 8-ounce cups of water a day. And that's perfectly fine. That's 64 ounces. That's great. The average person is going to consume anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 milliliters, which is, roughly 50 to 70 ounces of liquid a day. So 8 8-ounce glasses is 64 ounces. But that's not 64 ounces plus whatever coffee, juice, milk, tea, soda, etc. That's 64 ounces total. And so for some people, if they're having issues with nighttime urination, then yeah, we advise them maybe cut back your fluids late in the afternoon or minimize with dinner and then nothing after dinner. And sometimes that'll be helpful. But unfortunately, some people's metabolisms are such that it doesn't even matter when they drink, their body decides to make its urine at certain times of the day.
Yeah. There was a study that suggested that eating more vegetables, bread, and chicken, I think it was, could reduce the risk of incontinence.
Right. Yeah, I was looking at that same study, and that same study is also, saying to avoid smoking, which is a big one for sure, obesity, and carbonated beverages. I don't think it's so much the specific foods that they say is going to reduce the incontinence. I think that was more of an association. I think the key is you basically, and again, this is for all of medicine, a healthy diet is going to help matters. And that's a diet that's going to be high in fruit and vegetables with lots of fiber. Because one of the other issues that's a notorious culprit when it comes especially to overactive bladder issues are the bowels. Constipation often goes hand in hand with overactive bladder problems. And the more constipated the patient is, the worse their bladder behaves. So one of our treatments in treating overactive bladder issues is actually being aggressive with the constipation and trying to up the fiber. The problem is it's not just about fiber. Fiber only works if it's consumed with liquid. You need the water for the fiber to have its effect. So we don't really want fluid restriction, especially in the context of using fiber to improve the bowel behavior. But, your standard, let's say the good old Mediterranean diet, which really factors all of this in, is actually the perfect diet when it comes to the bladder.
I was joking with Laurie Twine Brody before the show today about the brain, and I've got to retrain myself because here I'm on, I've been on 90 minutes a day on the air, and suddenly I'm on an extra half hour. I'm wondering about does the brain, what's that correlation between the brain and the bladder?
Larry, you just nailed it. It's huge. It's the most important regulator of the bladder. In fact, nowadays, the hot subject in overactive bladder research is actually looking at the nervous system, specifically looking at MRIs and functional MRIs of the brain. And they have identified differences in patients who have overactive bladder, especially with incontinence, in certain parts of the brain relative to those who don't. And the brain is the ultimate regulator of the bladder. In fact, what we now think is that in those patients where there's not an obvious cause for their overactive bladder, such as a prostate issue or previous trauma, the thought is that there's actually a disconnect between the brain's ability to regulate the bladder and the bladder such that the bladder becomes independent of the brain and almost reverts back to its infantile state. And nobody thinks twice about a baby that urinates often and wets themselves. And part of our treatments is to try to reestablish the brain's dominance over the bladder. You hate to say everything's all in your head, but in this case, to some degree, for some people, it really is their loss of the brain's ability to inhibit the bladder.
Paul in Turtle Lake is wondering whether the fact that their young grandson didn't need to urinate first thing in the morning, it doesn't need to, could that be a problem or become a problem? It's a young guy, a young kid.
Without knowing how full his bladder is at the time, it's possible that he urinated in the middle of the night and literally doesn't have anything in the bladder in the morning. I think it would really depend on what the rest of his daytime and evening bladder habits are like. But for, in and of itself, I don't think you can say that there's necessarily anything wrong with it. I mean, most people, you know, who hold their urine overnight will wake up in the morning to urinate. I think the big question is at what point does he, and how much is coming out and so forth? I think if he's got an otherwise perfectly normal bladder behavior and he's otherwise doing perfectly well, it's probably not something to worry too much about.
Okay. Final question, what can we do to avoid both incontinence and constipation?
Well, again, for constipation, it's diet for constipation, you know, eating proper diet with a high fiber intake and enough fluid. And then you just had the physical therapists on. I am a huge proponent of the pelvic floor exercises, otherwise known as Kegel exercises. I think unless you have a pain component where sometimes the muscles are overworked and that's the source, and then you don't want to be doing them. But if it's just for regular bladder maintenance and proper behavior, I think Kegels should be taught in high school and everybody should do them every day until the day they die.
A great pleasure, Dr. Michael Goralnik. Thank you so much. I hope we can do this again. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Happy to participate.
Dr. Michael Goralnik of the Medical College of Wisconsin, director of the Urodynamics Lab at Frater Hospital in Milwaukee. Big thanks to our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer, of course, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.